You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. The 2017 Equinox clearance is on right now. $8,000 off MSRP on all units. The 2018s are also here, so check it out at lakewoodchev.com.
Let's get to the Rashog Report, brought to you by Auto City Edmonton, St. Albert Trail, and 131st Avenue. Cars, vans, trucks, SUVs, you name it, they have it. Over 750 previously owned vehicles to choose from, all at great prices, great deals, great financing options. Check it out at AutoCityEdmonton.com. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, Maj asked a good question. Who do you think has a better chance to win their award, Shirelli or McClellan?
Good question. Who is who's the competition in each again? Can you remind me?
You've got Poyle and Dorion up against Shirelli. And you have Babcock and Tortorella against McClellan.
Poyle is always going to be a good bet because they, the Preds always try and do more with less. And I think the trade, that massive trade that he made, similar to the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson type deal, he doesn't have the benefit of a Connor McDavid in his roster. So I could potentially see David Poyle right in there with Peter Chiarelli. And then it was Babcock and who?
Babcock and Tortorella.
Oh, and Tortorella, yeah. Torts had a pretty awesome year with a young team, like lots of young players in his lineup. And he got a lot out of those guys during the regular season. And again, benefit of superstars. And I think that will factor into voting a little bit. I think that Chiarelli and McClellan both get the nod just because of the dramatic turnaround in the standings that the team has had. But I think if you're voting, you can't help but think how much of that has to do with McDavid, and neither of those guys had anything to do with Connor McDavid. So, I don't know. I feel like they would be the outside shot to get those because of that. So let's say Poyle and let's say Torts.
Poyle and Tortorella. I would agree.
Babcock did a great job with young guys too, man. Like a really good job with young players. So
He had a lot of new ones too, superstars. Yeah, I think Tortorella wins it for Columbus. And I think the interesting thing, like Poyle, obviously the Subban for Weber, but he was trading like a superstar, like, you know, an Olympian for another guy who's an Olympian, right? So it'll be curious to see. I think Chiarelli has a better chance of the two to win because I think Tortorella is going to win the Coach of the Year for sure.
Yeah.
We had Ray Ferraro on earlier today discussing Jesse Puljujärvi. And he's seen him, of course. Obviously, he didn't play a lot so far in the tournament. But he mentioned the thing that surprised him was he seemed to struggle with the pace of play. And you know, a combination maybe of a lack of confidence, being an offensive guy who's frustrated, wanting to score more even at the American League level. And where if you have that, let's say he comes to training camp next year and – you know, let's say Pitlick and Slepyshev and them just show more confidence. Do you think there's a chance they start Puljujärvi in the American League, or is it a lock that he starts here next year?
Good question. I don't think that they will feel the need to start him in the American Hockey League. I think that they would lean more towards whatever happens through training camp, giving him an opportunity to play a lot of games and to get his feet underneath him at the NHL level, like they did with Draisaitl in his second season when he came back. And then if it's not working, then you have to send him down. And maybe in the same way it motivated Draisaitl, that has the potential to motivate Puljujärvi. So I don't know if they, unless they make some significant additions on the right side, first of all, I'm not sure how they can, but I don't know that that's the best way to handle him, as opposed to giving him the opportunity, seeing that it's not working, and then making a move with him that makes sense to the player, and then getting him to work his way back. So I would be surprised if he started the season in the American League. It would have to be a pretty dramatic lack of performance in training camp and exhibition for him not to start with a spot, I would say.
We talked about it with Struds and Ferraro looking at ways for the NHL to, you know, and everybody agreed the number one thing, call the rule book. That would be the first one. And then, like, the
NHL, making the game better, you're talking?
Well, not maybe allow, like, everybody admits that the players can skate faster now and shoot harder. I don't necessarily know that the game itself has played faster per se. You know, do guys have the puck more now than they did before, or is everybody just checking in and chipping in? Like, McDavid's obviously an exception, right? And Oilers fans may be biased because McDavid and Draisaitl do carry the puck a fair amount, but there's very few guys like that who do it, and A, because the rules, well, the refs just don't want to call it. But do you think the NHL needs to have another think tank to really look down and not make drastic moves now, but recognize that their game overall is becoming less entertaining than it used to be?
Well, listen, I was at the most recent NHL games and the Board of Governor meetings. I'm trying to remember which one it was. I think it was the GM meetings where they took the guys into groups and sent them off. And the first day was basically blue skying, where they just all got into a group and they basically gave them the pep talk and said, no idea is too silly. Get into there and throw it all against the wall and bat it around and come back with some recommendations. The NHL is doing this. It's not like there's no sort of think tank actually happening. That's often what these meetings are for, but in particular, this most recent one, they went over this, and then that was basically the entire day one. We were all looking at each other because we're there to report on news, and we're looking at each other going, what? It was just all an idea day? And so they do this, man. They sit in these groups, and they come up with these ideas, and they go and they hash them around, and they see if anything gets any traction, and nothing is off limits. And you hear from everything from changing where the face-off circles are to changing the way face-offs work based on different whistles to all sorts of different stuff, changing the shape of the goalposts. I know Ray's always liked the idea of that. All of these things are brought up. So it's not that these conversations don't happen, but it takes a tremendous amount of time and it takes a lot for anything to really gain traction at these meetings and with these committees. So it's not that they're not thinking of it. It's just, I remember the main thought coming out of that was the game's actually in decent shape and they didn't feel like they needed any dramatic change. That's what they came to.
Yeah, and I just wonder if that's a concern, because I agree, it doesn't surprise me that they see that way, but I just look at the others. Even soccer has increased scoring, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the NHL looks, well, we still have TV numbers and we still have individual cities doing well, and that there's no fear factor there. And maybe pro sports is different than other businesses, but I just, as slow as it becomes less entertaining, I think, like, Edmonton's probably a different market because of McDavid and Draisaitl. I don't think there's any debate about that. But I'm talking overall, because when I asked a question to our listeners today, most admitted they watch fewer and fewer other hockey games. Because they find other, unless they've got an emotional attachment like they do to the Oilers, they don't find the games entertaining like they used to be.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I can't. How's the average consumer consuming the NHL? Are they only interested in their team, not interested in watching more of these playoffs? I mean, I think a lot of this is coming to light because of the way the Ottawa Senators are playing the game. It's not a great style. It's kind of tough hockey to watch. It's a little bit, you know, it's boring. I do think that there, I mean, I thought that the Oilers in Anaheim were, I thought there was excitement level there. I thought that, I don't know. I'm not as convinced that there's this overwhelming issue. And I heard you and Struts talking about it a little bit before. I'm not as convinced that there's, that the system is broken and needs to be repaired because the state of the game is in complete disrepair and the entertainment value has never been lower. And I don't necessarily agree with those ideas. I think they always need to be tweaking and always trying to be making sure that they're staying on top of things. But I honestly, I don't see the game in a state right now that where the panic button needs to be pushed. And maybe I'm in the minority there. But I mean, listen, shrink up goalie equipment, call the rules that are in place. And when the managers get pissy enough and get angry enough and start pushing the envelope enough for those things to happen, they'll happen. And then you'll see more goals start to get scored.
Yeah, but I guess to me, like, that's such an easy solution, yet they're not even willing to want to make that change, which boggles my mind.
Yeah, and that's right. So the rules probably exist to make it the type of game that you want. And the way they call it through 82 games is different than the way they call it in the postseason. I mean, we see that every year, and we're seeing it again this year. So do all the rules have to go out the window during the postseason because power plays and games are worth so much more and you're not wanting to, that tends to be the way it goes. And so, yeah, I don't know. I, I understand what you're saying, and I'm thinking that when I'm watching that other series too, I'm going like, oh man, this is tough. Everybody just sitting back waiting for something to happen. But I think the rules are in place, and I've been to enough of those meetings to know that when they start to get frustrated enough and say, okay, start, then they will, at least for a little bit, and maybe that'll elicit some sort of change. But wholesale changes, I'm not sure. You have to be so careful with wholesale changes to the game because there's always going to be a consequence nobody thought of. And if you make too dramatic a change and there's an unforeseen consequence, all of a sudden it can really shape a game differently. And you have to be careful about that, I think.
Ryan Schrock from TSN joins us. Draisaitl in Germany, massive underdogs tomorrow. But in Cologne, Germany right now, like Leon Draisaitl is the rock star of rock stars for him. Him and Philipp Grubauer are likely going to have to be unbelievable for Germany to have a chance. But just that scene for Draisaitl tomorrow and even today is probably going to be one of the best moments of his young career.
Well, and the World Championships for those guys are a really big deal. I mean, it really goes to show, when you look at how much hockey Draisaitl has played this year, and the fact that we know he wasn't well, he was sick in the playoffs, the number of minutes that he had to play, how tough that loss was, all the games that he played last summer between the World Cup and the World Championship and the Olympic qualifiers, I mean, he's just played a tremendous amount of hockey. So it just goes to show you what this tournament, the World Championship, means to European players. Mm-hmm. And so he goes there. He's a huge part of it. He'll be one of the, if not the greatest players his country's ever seen. And Leon Draisaitl is a huge, huge deal. So I think it's great. I think it's good experience for him. And who knows what the outcome will end up being, but I like the dedication that he shows to his country. I think it looks good on him. I think it's gutsy, and you can't help cheer for guys like that when they go play for their home country and they're underdogs the way they're going to be.